Weekends on ABC Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us on Saturday afternoons, and we'll be talking about your dream dinner party scenario as we do every Saturday in just a moment. But what have you been up to? What are you up to right now?
Doing the last finishing touches to my show, and I've just finished writing a kids' book, so that has been keeping me busy.
Oh, great. What's the kids' book about?
I don't know whether I'm allowed to say it, but it's based on stories that I told my son at bedtime, so there is a wealth of material for me. Yeah, so that's been really fun. He's been being an informal editor for me, telling me which bits he likes.
And brutally honest, I'm sure, young man.
Apparently it's okay, but it needs more bums. That's what I've been told.
Bums, more farts, more burps, please, mum.
Yep, done. That's right.
And what's it like? I mean, you did take a bit of a break from touring at festivals last year. You've got a full festival tour book coming up over the next couple of months. How are you feeling?
I'm really excited about it. I had such a great time working on The Weekly with Charlie, and it was such a great experience, and it really stretched my skill set. But I'm really excited to get back on stage because there's nothing like it.
Yeah, okay. Just bouncing off the audience, the energy, the enthusiasm.
Yeah, yeah. And the moments that you know will never happen again, you know, like I like to touch the audience a little bit, not too much, it's not terrifying, but I like to talk to them. And so I love getting little stories from audience members, and I just love that feeling when someone makes me laugh as well, when the whole room is all just laughing at something that you didn't expect to happen.
Well, I expect that a dinner party at Cal Wilson's house would be a bucket of laughs, and of course that's what we're asking you to reveal to us this afternoon on Saturday afternoon. It is about the time of day when you do start making plans for dinner. So I've asked you to come up with your dream dinner party scenario. If there was anyone in the world you could invite, any kind of food you could serve, what would you put out? And you've come up with some interesting names. Can you tell us who you'd invite for dinner, Cal?
Okay, so I would invite Sandy Toksvig, Professor Francesca Stavrakopoulou, and Tom Waits.
Okay, now let's walk through. Sandy obviously is a comedian, but why? What is it about her that made her such an appealing idea for a dinner guest for you?
Sandy Toksvig is just one of my idols. I think she's so fantastic. She's a new host of QI. She's a broadcaster. She's incredibly astute. She's funny. She's clever. She's incredibly supportive of other women. I met her when I went over to do QI. I didn't get to be on an episode with her at that stage, but she invited me to be part of her radio show News Quiz as well. And she was just such a warm, welcoming, funny, delightful person that I just want to hang out with her more.
Do you think, I mean, in this day and age, is it still necessary for women to be supportive of women? Is that still where
we're
at?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. No, of course it is. Of course it is. You look at who's the president of the United States now. Of course we need to be supportive of each. Women didn't go on the march.
Yeah.
Women didn't go on the march because they needed exercise. You know, there's more at stake. So we definitely women that look after other women, we definitely need those.
How do you go about talking, with your son about women's issues? Is it a subject that comes up? How do you raise him to be aware of that?
Well, we talk about things. It even comes down to things as simple as colours. Like when he went off to kindergarten, he came home saying that pink was a girl's colour.
Right.
And so we had a big conversation about how colours aren't gender specific, and that there's no girls' colours and no boys' colours, and that when he comes, because my husband and I are so aware of making sure that he's raised knowing that women and men are equal, it's when he comes home from the outside world and goes, someone said I look like a girl or something, that's when we have to have those conversations.
Yep.
And I think all we can do is just keep talking to him about it and demonstrating as well, you know, and I think because he's growing up in a household where I'm the primary breadwinner and his dad is the primary carer, he works as well, but right from the start my husband has been the one that's been at home looking after my son, so he's in an environment where he sees that in operation.
Given the fact that you have travelled, you know, as you mentioned, you met Sandy when you were over in the UK, obviously you were born in New Zealand, time in Australia, elsewhere, I mean, where do you think Australia actually stands when it comes to gender equality? In front, behind, backwards, forwards?
I think that's a really hard question to answer. I think we've definitely got a ways to go. I think even the fact that we don't have marriage equality shows that we're a little bit backward in that. You know, the fact that there's a lot of wedding tourism to New Zealand, because that's a place that you can get married if you want to get married. I think we definitely still have a long way to go. I don't know where I would place us in relation to other countries, I would say possibly a little better than the States right now. But then who knows? I feel like the world could explode at any moment. You know, I sort of feel like, you know, who knows what that mad orangutan is going to do.
Exactly. And no doubt he would be a topic of conversation at this dinner party that you've put together, because you've also invited Tom Waits along. Now, why Tom?
Tom Waits, I love his music so much. I discovered him when I was a teenager and he was quite unlike anything I'd heard before. My parents hated him, which also attracted me to him, I think, as well. but I just love the stories that he tells in his songs, and he has such interesting characters. I love the sounds that he makes. I love the music. I just find him so fascinating. I love that he writes with his wife, Kathleen Brennan. Catherine Brennan. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's Kathleen. But he writes with his... Oh, now I'm doubting myself. But he writes with his wife, and I love the stories that they make together, and they tell such interesting, just interesting tales. And, you know, it's music that you listen to the lyrics and you get just as much, if not more, out of the lyrics than you do just from the beautiful noises.
Mm. And Professor Francesca Stavrakopoulou, you're going to have to help me out with the pronunciation.
Francesca Stavrakopoulou. She is a fantastic scholar of the Hebrew Bible and ancient religion. She was a guest on Charlie Pickering's show, The Weekly, last year, and I got to chat to her because I was one of the writers. And she's just the most fascinating person. She's a biblical scholar. She loves the Bible. She's an atheist.
Okay.
She doesn't believe that most of the Bible actually happened. And she has many fascinating facts and things about the Bible that, and having grown up in a household that went to church all the time and having been quite religious as a teenager, I find it really fascinating just to listen to her talk about what she thinks is fact and what she thinks is fiction, and what the Bible was, the purpose of the Bible when it was written, and how we view it now. So she's just a fascinating person to talk to. Very glamorous. She has excellent hair.
Well,
she's also really interesting to talk to about being a woman in an environment where there are a lot of men around her and perhaps older people as well. Mm-hmm. And so I am really identified with her being in an industry where there are more men than women. So I loved talking to her about that.
I think your dinner party, though, however, will do one of the things that a lot of people suggest you're not supposed to do at a dinner party, and that is bring up the subjects of sex, politics, and religion. Is there anything that's ever off the table conversation-wise for you at dinner parties, or is it anything you want to talk about, off we go?
Well, I think it's what everyone's comfortable with. Like,
sure.
I think... And also, I would hope that the people at my dinner parties aren't going to be, I don't know if I can say dickheads on the ABC, but I would hope that they would be decent people with empathy for the other guests. Like, I'm looking at my dinner guests and going, yeah, I'm kind of covering everything. But I would hope that the people that would come to my house would be respectful of each other, and that there would be perhaps debate, but not personal attack.
Which is hard to do it often in this day and age, I find. Everyone seems so defensive. Is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. It is interesting, I think, now that if you say, like on Twitter, for example, if a woman says something about, a bad thing happened to me that a guy did, immediately the response is hashtag not all men.
Right.
And so you get a lot of angry men going, well, not all men are like that. And what the woman has said is not that all men are like that, but just her experience was at the hands of a man. And rather than going, that's a terrible thing that happened to you, how awful, they've just gone, but we're not all like that, which is not the point she was making. So mm-hmm. I think that we do tend to be defensive, and we do tend to go, but I'm not like that, before actually listening to a person's experience and going, oh yeah, that must have been awful.
And trying to relate and understand.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Of course, if there ever is an awkward moment at a dinner party, it's helpful to have a little bit of music maybe setting the scene. You've selected some songs to play. Let's talk about your first one. We'll hear it in just a second. But Elbow, One Day Like This. Why this song?
This is such a joyful song. It's such a beautiful song. I love Elbow. They're one of my favourite bands. Were I allowed more dinner guests, I would have had the whole band over as well. But then it would be weird, because you wouldn't want to play their music to them while they were eating. Like, that would be a very uncomfortable thing. That would be like someone playing my stand-up set to me while I was around at their house for breakfast. I wouldn't like it. Elbow are just a fantastic... they're just so gorgeous. I think Coldplay talk about them as being one of their influences. They're from Manchester. They've been together for like 20-something years. Again, beautiful lyrics, like Guy Garvey, the singer who writes the lyrics, has beautiful stories to tell. This song is just really joyful, and it just kind of gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and I love it.
Great. Well, let's take a listen. Elbow, One Day Like This. Just joined us. This is Saturday Afternoons. I am Catherine Feeney. Joining us to talk through her dream dinner party scenario is the fantastic comedian Cal Wilson, who's just about to hit Australia's comedy festival circuit again in a big way. Hooray. Now, Elbow was fun. We're at the point, I suppose, at your dinner party where you're starting to think about the kind of food that you'd be serving. Are you a big cook?
I'm a good baker. I'm not a great cook. I think because I quite like rules and measuring things. So I think baking is one of those areas where you need to do that. You can't just go, oh, a pinch of flour, half a bag of salt. You know, you have to do your right measurements. And my grandmother was a great baker and she's passed that on to me, I think. My husband is a good cook. So he would be pressed into service for the heavy lifting of this dinner party.
With the notion of baking, we'll get onto the menu in just a sec, but is it similar to, I suppose, your work as an improvisational comedian, in that in improv there are rules, this is how it works out. I mean, is there a similarity there, do you think?
Not at all.
Different?
Not at all.
Yep.
Yep.
Throw out the rules!
Because improv is about being in the moment and just doing what feels right and going with your first impulse and taking the first idea that comes into your head, whereas baking is like we have to do these measurements. Like, obviously there are some rules in improv, but I would say improv is probably more like if I was an amazing chef that had like four ingredients in a cupboard and went, oh, I can just make a pavlova out of that. That's a baking analogy. I've ruined it. But, you know, like a chef that can just throw something together, that would be more of an improv analogy, I think, whereas baking is more rigid. It's probably, baking is like a play, maybe, like where you've got to have all the ingredients in a certain order for the result to be what you want.
A play in three acts, just like a dinner party. Walk us through your three-act dinner menu. What are we eating first, second and third?
Okay, snacks. We're just having snacks. Right. I'm not
grazing,
doing my
just
ideal.
Grazing,
you know, butters, beautiful olives, that fabulous kind of stuff. Hummus, gotta have hummus.
Yep.
Those cheesy sticks, you know, all the little nibbly things that you eat too much of and then you're like, well, we really don't need to eat dinner. We've had a lot of delicious carbs and we don't need to eat anything else. So there would be a lot of snacky things. A lot of those would be eaten by my son, who would also be present at this dinner party, I'm sure.
Excellent.
He would be talking a lot about Pokemon Go to the guests, who would be like, we could perhaps move on from this topic. But he'd be like, no, I have more to say. So we'd have our snacks. Then it's a barbecue. We're at a barbecue.
Great.
That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband is obsessed with his Weber. So he's got two. So he's got a gas one and
this
a charcoal
serious
one.
You will
totally
don't
serious
muck about. This
no,
is
no, we don't.
Rigid.
We don't.
Wow.
And it's great. It's chicken. We're having roast chicken. Chicken with an, you assault the chicken with an orange. So the chicken is stuffed with an orange. Then it's rubbed with all sorts of spices. And then that goes in the barbecue just for hours until it's just melts off the bone.
Mm.
And then we would do, this is my department, I would do a broccoli salad, which sounds hideous.
Yes,
two words that you go, I don't want this. Salad, boo, broccoli, boo. But this salad is amazing to the point where family members request it for Christmas.
Okay, walk me through it. What's in it? Broccoli, obviously.
Just broccoli. It's basically broccoli in a bowl. That's what it is.
Done.
It's got red onion. It's got cranberries. It's got pine nuts. It's got pumpkin seeds. It's got lemon juice, lemon zest, red onion. Did I say red onion? Mayonnaise. And then it's just kind of marinated overnight.
Wow.
And then everything's really soft and delicious and sort of sweet and slightly tart, and it's really
gorgeous.
For what it sounds like, it sounds horrific, but it's amazing.
No,
and a friend gave
you
me the recipe.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
sounds
it
great.
Is really people requesting broccoli. Like,
I know. Love it.
It's an astonishing outcome. But yeah, that is the kind of now become my signature salad, if one is allowed to have one of those.
Was dinner a big meal in your family when you were growing up? And is it a big meal in your house now? Like everyone sits around the table and you must be present at dinner?
Yes, yeah, it was definitely when we were growing up. My dad had quite a conservative taste, so it was very traditional dinner, I think. And I think now what I really enjoy is that my husband is like a great cook. And so we have different things and we don't cook our vegetables quite as long as we used to when I was growing up. You know, that kind of, I think we have a different relationship to food now, but we definitely sit down for dinner with the three of us and, you know, there's no TV on and that we talk about the day. And I really love that because we have such different sort of schedules and my son is at school now. It is a great time to sit down and probably talk about Pokemon Go quite a lot because that's just what we talk about at the moment.
It is. I mean, I just think it's one of those rare occasions where you can remember that every day that you spend with the people that you see every day is a different day for everyone in their own lives. And this is the opportunity for you to actually catch up and see, you know, who are you? What happened today? That's right. You've got your own life and you're an interesting person. We can really easily take our loved ones for granted in a sense.
Mm.
Same with friends. Do you throw dinner parties regularly? Are you a big entertainer?
We're probably more barbecue people. Okay. Like we have, and we're really lucky that we have a really gorgeous street community. So, since we had our son, like we've really got to know all of our neighbours. And so, we have a Christmas street party where, you know, everyone goes out and there's trestle tables on the footpath and everyone brings food and Santa comes and gives out presents to the kids. And it's just a really lovely street. So, we tend to have spontaneous barbecues with our neighbours and then, less regularly, we have other friends over, but yeah, it's like we're living in Ramsey Street, I think, but with less kind of hotel fires and slightly more ethnically diverse than Ramsey Street manages to be.
How refreshing! Let's take a listen to the second track that you're playing at this Dream Dinner Party. Tell me a little bit about the Hamilton soundtrack selection, Guns and Ships.
Okay, so we are obsessed with the soundtrack to Hamilton at the moment, which is, I don't know if you've listened to it, but it's quite brilliant. So it's a hip-hop musical. It's about American politics. It's about Alexander Hamilton, one of the founding fathers. And my son is obsessed with it, and I'm obsessed with it, and my husband is grudgingly coming around to the fact that he loves it as well. So we just play this all the time. So odds on, this would happen at a barbecue. And this number, Guns and Ships, has got some incredible rapid-fire, just lyrical dexterity in it. So conversation would probably be interrupted at this point because my son and myself would be singing along with great gusto to this song.
Excellent. Let's take a listen.
How does a ragtag volunteer army in need of a shower somehow defeat a global superpower? How do we emerge victorious from the quagmire? Leave the battlefield waving Betsy Ross's flag higher? Yo, turns out we have a secret weapon, an immigrant you know and love who's unafraid to step in. He's constantly confusing, confounding the British henchmen. Everyone give it up for America's favorite fighting Frenchman! I'm taking this horse by the reins, wicked red coats weathered with bloodstains. Feel I'm never gonna stop until I make a drop, I burn them up and scatter the remains down. Watch me engaging them, escaping them, and raging them out. I go to France for more fun, I come back with more guns and ships. And so their balance shifts.
We rendezvous with Rochambeau, consolidate their gifts.
We can end this war in Yorktown, cut them off at sea. But for this to succeed, there's someone else we need.
I know.
So he knows what to do in the trench, ingenuitive and fluent in French. I mean,
yes, it is Saturday afternoons. You are on ABC Digital Radio right across Australia with me, Catherine Feeney, and the delightful Cal Wilson. Now, Cal, we're coming to the end of your dream dinner party scenario. I'm still getting over the incredible broccoli salad that we had alongside mains, but what are we looking forward to for a bit of sweet treat at the end?
This is a very old school New Zealand. She's like, what is she? The kind of Alison Holst is like she's a cooking icon of New Zealand, and she put out a muffin cookbook about a million years ago, and I always make the lemon muffins from it using the lemons from our lemon tree, and so they're just little. I make them little tiny lemons, and they've got kind of sugar crusting on top, and I make them at the dinner party. Like, so when we have friends over, I make them, and so we have them hot, so it's like it's quite cakey. And it's, yeah, they're very delicious, and so I would just make those.
Wow, that sounds delightful. Do you have many other things besides lemon trees growing in your yard? Is it quite a veggie patch you've got going on there?
No, we don't. We should do. We used to have beautiful rosemary, but that we somehow managed to kill that by putting decking over it. So we don't. It's a low maintenance garden, but lots of massive birds of paradise, which I really love. I feel that's such a beautiful Australian-looking plant. And my husband has become obsessed with the lawn. So he's been, you know, he's out there with his sprinklers and his, you know, nutrients and all that kind of stuff. So he's really embraced the lawn.
Now, speaking of your husband, I understand that the show that you've put together this year has a little bit of a reveal about the things that you do to torment your beloved. Can you walk me through a little bit about what we're going to be getting from Cal on stage this festival season?
This year is actually more about it's about talking about things that I've never talked about before, and so things that matter to me, like feminism and things that I haven't really addressed before, and just talking about my hatred of conflict, which I am having to get over. So it's talking a little bit about that. I have talked about tormenting my husband. One of my favourite things to do to him, which I've done ever since the day that we moved in together, is that if we come home from a night out, I make sure that I get to the front door first and I unlock it, and then I turn around and I pretend it's our first date.
Oh.
And I reach up, I give him a kiss, and I go, "Thanks so much for a lovely night." And then I run inside and lock the door. So I've been doing that for about 13 years now.
And never gets old. Never gets old.
He hasn't laughed once. He has not found it amusing ever. But he finally snapped over Christmas, and we came home from a night out, and I got out of the car as usual, and then suddenly he's just running past me, and he sort of shoved me into the birds of paradise, got to the front door, turned around, gave me the fingers and went, "Thanks so much for a lovely night," and then ran inside and slammed the door. And it would have been hilarious, except we had our son with us, who was very traumatised. It was going, "Why has Daddy left us?" And now the really bad thing is that now my son has decided that he does it as well. And so now it's kind of this three-way scramble to get into the door. And the thing is with my son, I know, is that if he makes it in first, he's not going to unlock the door again. So we have to really fight to get in the house.
Oh, my goodness. The hilarity continues. And I guess with this show, I mean, what is it about where you are in your life? Because obviously comedy draws often from real life experience, and you find the funny in things that aren't necessarily funny as they are playing out. Why is it that you're ready to talk about some of these big issues in your life now, Cal?
I just sort of feel where the world is at the moment, that we need to speak up more and that we need to support each other. And I'm trying to teach my son to be honest and to be bold and to talk about what he needs and what he wants, and to be kind and to be good to other people. So all of the things, I guess, that I'm wanting to teach him, I also go, well, I need to be doing those things now, and I need to speak up for what I want, and you know, things that bother me. I want him to grow up in a better world, so I have to contribute to that as well. I'm sounding terribly noble. There are jokes in it. So I think because I've been reflecting on my own life and thinking about the skills that I still need to learn as well, to be more honest and upfront about things. You know, sticking up for myself, even if it's just to not go along with a racist old taxi driver when he says something terrible, rather than keeping quiet to actually challenge him on it. You know, that sort of tiny things like that.
It's a hard thing to do, though. And I mean, you mentioned dealing with conflict, and that's something that I'm working on myself. Where I find it tricky, and if you've got any advice, please, how do you do it in a way that isn't going to invite more hostility? You know, I struggle to find a way to talk about, say, my feelings, or to maybe shut down someone who is being completely inappropriate in a way that won't inflame a situation. How are you going with that?
I don't know. I'm still learning this as well, you know, yeah. But I guess it's things like using I statements, you know, rather than going, "You're being an idiot," going, "I'm not comfortable with what you're saying." Mm. Or, you know, just even kind of distracting a conversation, or just speaking up, saying, I don't agree with that and I don't want to talk about it, or, you know, something like that. I mean, I am ridiculous with confrontation and conflict. This is how bad. I'm better now, but for a while I couldn't listen to John Fain if he was being rude to someone on the ABC. I'd be like, "Oh, it's just too much. Like, I just can't. Oh, please don't be rude." You know, like, he could be talking to Peter Dutton and I would just be going, like, "Please don't be rude to the evil potato." You know, like, I would be so, a part of my sort of homework for myself is that I'm not allowed to change the channel if there is any conflict on Talkback or any conflict on the ABC. I'm like, "Just say, listen, no one's going to die. It's going to be all right."
I mean, how much do you think this aversion to conflict, you know, is a female thing? Is it a chick thing, a problem that women kind of need to overcome?
Maybe, but I think also I actually think it's a really. Having talked to other friends that I grew up with, we think it's a Christchurch issue. Like, we think it's quite a Kiwi thing to want to make sure that everything's nice and not upset anybody, not cause a fuss and all, you know, that sort of thing. But I think possibly too, maybe it is where women are taught to be nice and demure and not to cause trouble and not be loud and stroppy and things. So yeah, it's probably all that as well. But I think now I'm in my mid-40s and I think I'm just tired of myself. So I'm just going to suck it up and be a bit bolder.
Put it out there. Oh, Cal. Well, excellent. I can't wait to catch some clips from your show. I think I might come and check you out at the Brisbane Comedy Festival if I have the chance, which is, of course, coming up in March. But, hey, we've got one track left to play at your dinner party. This is the Sayonara, the farewell track, the big finish. What have we got?
We've got a track by a New Zealand band called Golden Horse, and the track is Northern Lights, and it's a very soppy reason that I'm playing, but it was the song that we had our first dance to at our wedding.
Oh, lovely.
And it's a beautiful, it's a lovely album. It always makes me think of summer, and I, you know, I'm assuming I'm having this dinner party in summer because it's a barbecue and we're all outside fending off mosquitoes. So it just seemed appropriate. It's a beautiful light way to finish the evening.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Cal, let's take a listen to Northern Lights.
Stones like feet are just like you underground. You stole my feet from floating out.